Hello everybody and welcome to The Wicked Side. As always, we want to issue a trigger warning. The things we talk about can get a little dark, a little distressing, and a little depressing. So mind where you are, and if you're at a good place and a good time, join us here on The Wicked Side. Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Wicked Side. This is Brenna speaking.
Hey, everybody, it's time. I don't get to have the same fun not seeing the screen.
That's true.
Second podcast in a row where my computer just doesn't want to play nice.
Yeah, I know. We're using mine again. I'm sorry.
It annoys me.
I know. Because you consider my computer beneath you.
I have a Ferrari, and we're running this thing on a moped.
And the moped works better.
It's getting us through, apparently. The Ferrari is broke down. I guess the fastest car is the one that actually runs.
Right.
Oh, man. Fuck.
Oh, God.
Yeah. But I have to, like, move the mic and clamp it to the table. And my seating position is slightly different from what it would usually be. This is bullshit.
I know. Well, before we go any further, we did want to issue a big congratulations. We've had somebody on the podcast before, Megan. She was in the Dr. Nabe episode that we did, and she recently got married to Justin, and I know him very well, too, and I officiated the couple's wedding, and I cannot say congratulations enough. They're both beautiful, wonderful people. It was a beautiful, beautiful time, and really, really enjoyed it. So congratulations to them again.
Hey, congratulations. Welcome to the Wicked Side Wedding Productions.
There we go. Yes. I was very happy for them, though. They're both wonderful people. But yeah, if you go back, you can find the Helen Abe episode, and that was the one Megan was in with me. So.
Hey.
Yep, yep. Aww. So she's a Wicked Side alum.
There you go. Pulling people into the cult of the Wicked Side.
Right. And then, of course, today is New Year's. As of the day we're recording, of course, it'll be much later by the time this comes out. But, yeah. So.
Yeah, standing at mom and dad's house feeling old as fuck today.
Yeah, we were. We were, too. Had a great music conversation with dad, though.
I know. Yeah, I got into the conversation about what songs make us the most emotional.
Yes. That was cool. It was really nice. Yeah. It was really nice. We talked a lot about Johnny Cash's Hurt and...
Yeah. Yeah,
it was a good time.
Oh, man. Yeah, today's been a good one. Pardon. Speaking of good ones, I have since you're not driving yourself home on this episode.
I get to drink with you.
As I say, I have a selection of whiskey here. I figured you might want to pour yourself one. I've got the Four Roses Small Batch Select. I got that nice Basil Hayden Toast.
Yeah, this is the one I'm thinking. This smells wonderful.
It's the most mild of them. Yeah, and then there's like a Gentleman's Jack and a Highland Park 12, which is a nice smoky black label scotch.
Yeah. I'll do this one. Here, you gotta do the cork, though.
All right, here goes. Oh.
Yeah, we gotta have that satisfying cork noise.
Oh, that was a very light cork noise. Oh. There, we're good. Here we go. Take two. Oh, okay. Very pronounced, though. All right, I got these glasses from mom and dad back in the day because they don't drink anymore. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm going to start out with the Highland Park 12.
You're going with the Highland Park 12.
Yeah, single malt.
And
single
I malt have scotch. The I'll Basil Hayden.
Basil Hayden Toast.
Toast.
So supposedly that is from a never-before-used barrel, so you're supposed to get a slightly different flavor. It's the one thing I found about it, it's very flavorful. It's mild. Mm-hmm. And for me, I like a really bold flavor with it. That's why I drink such high proof ones. So for me, it was slightly underwhelming, but I think if you don't drink high proof whiskey, it's probably really delicious.
Okay. It smells wonderful.
It's very
it's very
distinct. It's very aromatic.
Smell.
Mm-hmm. It's very good. It's just not my favorite of them. I like something that's a little more exciting. See what I mean, though? Flavorful, but smooth.
It is. It's got a good burn. It's nice and smooth. Yeah. I like that a lot.
Yeah. Man, I gave you a healthier pour than I thought. It's a nice one. It's like a 2 ounce pour. That's a good one.
It is. It's nice.
Yeah.
I like especially days like today because my throat's real dry.
Uh-huh.
And having a little bit of this on like a day like this is just, it feels good. It's soothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For me, it's the same place that like hot apple cider, like cocoa. Yes. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It's like adult hot chocolate for me.
It kind of is. You're not wrong. All right. So are you ready to get started?
Where am I going today?
Where are we going today?
Where are we going today? Oh, shit.
Yeah. So I'm stepping outside of my traditional role as narrator today, and I'm actually going to be joining you on this.
Oh, by golly, I won't be such a lonely journey. I'll have somebody else to be sad and horrified with.
Yeah, pretty much. But and the reason today is because we're going to actually be talking about a pair of warrior siblings.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm also going to be saying their names in the beginning for a few reasons, but mainly it's because I don't know if you would be able to guess the story or who they were.
Nothing springs to mind when you say warrior siblings. Yeah. So we'll see.
In part because their story is pretty closely guarded, so it goes largely untold.
Okay.
But today we're going to be telling the story, as best we are able, of the siblings Victorio and Lozen. Apache warriors who fought colonization and its attempts to wipe out their people and culture. So we're going to start at the beginning, or as close to the beginning as we can. You are Victorio. You were born sometime around 1825, and this was a tumultuous time, especially for Native Americans all across the continent. Native Americans weren't even considered U.S. citizens for the entirety of the 19th century. Newspapers from the era were filled with passionate and sometimes pretty awful debates on the treatment of our First Nations people. According to the Library of Congress, even those who were advocates for the rights of Indigenous people wrote about them as if they were subhuman. As we know, most Native Americans had been forced off their land and into reservations where conditions were extremely deplorable. Food, water, and proper shelter were extremely hard to come by.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Lozen, whose shoes I'm stepping into for this episode, was born roughly around 1840. So there's a bit of a difference between the two of them age-wise. So you were 1825.
Oh, I get to be the older sibling in this? Holy shit.
You get to be the older sibling,
Oh my God, what a weird world.
I thought you'd like the swap, so. Yep, so there's a bit of a difference age-wise between them. Both, of course, were the Chiricahua Apache. The band of siblings, and I actually have that phonetically, so I made sure I said it right. The band the siblings were part of was called the Warm Springs Apache, and it was originally led by their father. Despite fairly strict gender roles, Lozen learned to ride at the age of 7 and was considered to be a very talented rider. It's also important to know that both Victoria and Lozen were not their actual names. Victoria was actually Bidia or Bidiet. I think I said those right. And
I doubt it.
Probably not. I hope I said those right. I should amend that.
I would say, yeah. If all of the history of this podcast stands, you did not say it correctly.
Well, again, the only way I found those names was through reading it.
Okay.
So I didn't have the benefit of hearing anybody pronounce it. So I'm trying my best guess at that. What we do know is that, well, we have Victorio's name. And unfortunately, Lozen's real name has been lost to history. What we do know is that her name is more of a title, meaning someone who has stolen a horse during a raid.
Okay.
A defining time in both the siblings' lives came when Lozen was a child and Victoria a young man. Their band was lured in by Mexican soldiers pretending to offer peace. However, when the band approached, the soldiers opened fire, killing men, women, and children. The siblings managed to escape, but both suffered greatly. They never forgot the betrayal. And even after this, life was horribly challenging. During his childhood, Victorio constantly had to protect his people from Mexican bounty hunters, since the Mexican government had begun paying for Apache scalps. There were constantly raids on their camp. They were largely nomadic people who moved throughout their territory throughout the year. So depending, I believe it was like a 100-mile circuit, pretty much, that they made throughout the year. And they would stop at certain sites, and that's how they lived. That was their land.
Yeah.
According to some sources, Victorio actually had a nickname, too, from the Navajo. His nickname was He Who Checks His Horse. In 1853, we know the U.S. government considered him a chief and wanted him to sign documents on behalf of his people. We'll get back to that. In his 20s, he rode with and was taken under the wing of a man called Magnus Coloradus, who was the leader of the Chichihende Apache.
Hmm.
And I apologize if I butchered that. I did listen to that one phonetically, too, and I tried my best to hit the pronunciation, but, you know, I did what I could.
It'd be like that.
Yeah. And the band called, and he was part of the band, or the head of the band, called the Coppermine Band. Believe that you actually married his daughter and became his son-in-law. One of the things Victoria learned from his tutelage was how to set up an ambush, a tactic which he used to deadly efficiency.
Huh. Nice.
Yeah. Now, during this time, Victoria began teaching Lauzun everything he knew about how to survive in the unforgiving territory their people were a part of. There are mixed reports from sources on the rest of Lauzun's education from her people. Some say she refused to participate in any of the lessons of the female Apaches were expected to be taught. Others say she was made to learn, but she wasn't happy about it, and would participate in activities typically reserved for boys.
Yeah. I say that one sounds more realistic. Fuck, I'll learn that shit if I have to, but I'm playing over here.
Yeah. Another turning point was when Lauzun came of age. When she was around 13, she had a ceremony. During the ceremony, it was determined that Lauzun had a special power to tell where the enemies of her people were coming from. From what I understand, her arms and like fingers would begin to tingle with a sensation.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. This ended up removing her from the standard role of a female Apache and into the role of warrior and medicine woman, or prophet or priestess. I'm unsure of which is actually the correct term, or if they're all correct, because different sources used a different term for her.
Huh.
So, again, not sure. If any of our listeners know, please feel free to leave a comment or something like that so we can set that record straight. She began going on hunting trips and raids with her brother, who furthered her education, helping her become the warrior she was to become. She never married, despite having suitors. She convinced her brother that she needed to stay by his side to help protect the tribe. Around the time of the Civil War, New Mexico fell under control of the California Column, which was a Union force made up of volunteers. This produced an enemy for indigenous people named General Carleton. He began to launch campaigns against the Apache, killing and torturing their leaders. It became a very, very bloody conflict between the two. But Victorio still wanted peace. Eventually, Victorio signed a document that gave up his lands in exchange for home at a spot called Ojo Caliente. In 1874, a treaty was signed into law, but like many treaties made by the U.S. government during this time, the government violated it, going back on its word because eventually they wanted the land. Just 2 years later, the United States sent troops to attack the Warm Springs Apache without any cause or provocation. Warriors were away at the time, so the heaviest casualties were women and children. Victorio lost his wife and most of his children. Only two survived.
Oof.
Yeah. Lauzun saved one of her nephews by riding right into gunfire and picking the boy up and riding away.
Nice.
So they were very close. They're very, very close siblings.
Right.
You know, they protected each other. They had each other's back. Victorio didn't go anywhere without Lauzun. He completely trusted her.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those where, like, she was his advisor. It was a really strong bond. And you can just tell through the stories that how much they relied on one another.
Right.
Despite all of this and the death of his wife and children, Victorio still tried to honor his side of the treaty, even going so far as to punish other Apache who went off the reservation. He did not retaliate for the death of his wife or children. There were other attempts at peace talks, which included Geronimo, who, of course, is probably, I think, one of the most famous Apache.
Yeah.
The most well-known, certainly.
I mean, Native American in general, not just Apache. Just,
yeah.
Like, that's a name people know and don't even know why they know it.
Yeah, exactly.
They shout it when they jump off the diving board.
Mm-hmm. But instead of peace, Geronimo and the other leaders were actually arrested and taken off their reservation and put on the San Carlos Reservation, which was subject to brutal heat. The brutal heat of the Arizona desert, to be specific. The land Victorio had been promised had been stolen from them. After 4 months of hell, in 1877, the Warm Springs Apache had had enough. They took horses and weapons, and they escaped. They eventually made it back to New Mexico. Victoria was brilliant at using the terrain around him. He knew how to move his people. They escaped with roughly 200.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. That's and weird. That is men, women, and children. That is not just warriors. He did that.
Yeah, that's he not took a bunch of 18 to 20 something males. That's everybody.
Yep.
That's crazy.
Yep.
Yeah.
He knew how to move quickly and quietly with a large group, and he was very efficient.
Apparently. I say you don't pull that kind of trick out without, I mean, and get out safely. Like,
right, exactly.
Not get everybody killed in the process.
And Lozen was instrumental during this time. She was one of the best horse thieves they had, and she was vital to gathering supplies for their journey.
Oh, yeah, nice. Yeah.
So they would sneak up on camps, settlements, things like that, and she would basically go steal a bunch of stuff that they needed to survive.
Gone in 60 seconds, Prairie Edition.
Yep, pretty much. In and out, man. Anyway, they made their way back to Ojo Caliente, where despite everything, Victorio tried for peace yet again. He actually turned himself over to U.S. forces. The man he turned himself over to was the commander of New Mexico forces at the time, Colonel Hatch, which he did try to uphold the treaty. He even contacted Washington himself, insisting that the agreements and the treaties be honored. But the U.S. government continued to ignore the treaty and gave Hatch the command to take them back to the brutality of the San Carlos Reservation. And Hatch did as he was ordered. So, yeah. Seeing the writing on the wall, however, the Apache left before the troops arrived in 1879, starting what was called Victorio's War.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Which I think is kind of bullshit that it's called Victoria's War because he didn't start it. He tried to avoid it every chance he got. Every chance he got. Yeah. He tried to do it the peaceful way. And yet it's named Victoria's War as if he's the violent one.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. In that situation, like, I tried and tried and tried. At least at this point, you know it's my fight. Like,
yeah.
I fought every other way I could. And I tried all the other ways, but apparently this is the way you wanted, so this is what you get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You see, people wanted to mine that land for silver and other precious metals. The investors didn't care about the lives of U.S. settlers, the U.S. military, let alone the native people. They manipulated the government as much as they could, no matter who it killed or who it hurt, in order to get crews in and line their pockets. And the only way to do that, of course, was to have the Native Americans removed.
Mm-hmm. Yep, sounds about right.
Yeah, it's agreed. Victorio still tried not to fight, but the pursuing army refused to leave them alone. With no other choice, he finally gave in, and the decision was made to fight back against the attempts to extinguish them. And they saw some initial success. On September 18th of 1879, they won a significant victory at the Battle of Las Animas Canyon. Other battles that were fought along the way included a battle at the Percha River, this was January 1st of 1880, the Don Matios Mountains, January 17th of 1880, the Caballo Mountains in January 30th of 1880, and the Almonds Wells in February 2nd of 1880. And again, San Andreas Mountains of February 9th. It's also believed that Victorio led a raid against a settlement in April of the same year that became known as the Alma Massacre, where 41 settlers were killed.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeehaw.
Yeah, I know.
The old west. Ye old.
Yeah. Lozen and Victorio, however, were brilliant strategists who knew the land and how to hide in it. They fought to minimize casualties on their side as much as they could, protecting their warriors with careful cunning and planning. Lozen in particular had an ability to know how to avoid their enemy and predict their movements, and they ended up dancing around them. They were so good at being evasive that Hatch resorted to using other Apache from the San Carlos Reservation to track them down. He also used buffalo soldiers to fight against the Apache. And for those who don't know, buffalo soldiers, yes, like the Bob Marley song, were black soldiers who were used to expand the American frontier. Their main function was to fight against indigenous people, but they also acted as a sort of law force. They dealt with cattle rustlers and horse thieves of every kind, and protected stagecoaches, cattle trains, and even settlements. The name buffalo soldier does come from the Native American people, although the reason why is unknown. There's different kinds of speculation and stories as to why they call them that.
So nice, because I immediately started humming it. For real.
Right. Yep. At one point in time in 1880, Hatch's men finally thought they had a chance to catch Victorio and his people unaware. Their Apache scouts told them that both the Chiricahua and the Mescalero Apache were gathered together camping in the Ambrio Basin, located in the San Andreas Mountains. They had about 700 cavalry ready. Hatch wanted to hit them from the east and the west, trapping them. But things went awry after a man named Captain Carroll arrived with two companies of cavalry troops before everybody else. He ignored the orders to wait, thinking the Apache would be an easy target to overtake, but they ended up being the ones in a trap, as the Apache were ready, locked, and loaded. The Apache warriors had them surrounded on three sides as they went into the valley. The fighting went on through the night, and Carroll's men were saved by reinforcements the next morning. Lozen and 50 other Apache warriors held back 300 U.S. cavalrymen. In the docuseries Warrior Women, which is free on Tubi, by the way, if anybody wants to watch it, and hosted by the absolutely stunning Lucy Lawless.
Nice.
Yes. Yeah, she was riding through the desert on a horse, and I'm like, bitch, you're already sexy. Don't make it worse.
No, I get that. Hey, man, I loved Xena back in the day. Early crush, man.
Yep. And she's still gorgeous today.
Oh, getting to see her in that Spartacus show was great, too.
Mm-hmm. Yep. A historian on the subject said that Thomas Cruz, a man with the 6th Cavalry, said, "I know I didn't kill any Apache because I never saw any Apache. All I saw was a low, long ridge from which smoke and bullets." From which came smoke and bullets.
Yeah, yeah.
The Apache retreated, exhausted and low on supplies. They moved downwards toward Mexico, with the U.S. troops still pursuing them. And it was during this time that one of the Apache women actually went into labor. And Lozen was forced between fulfilling her role as a healer or as her brother's right hand. I say this because this is actually how Victorio introduced her to Nana, or to Nanan, another chief. He said, "Lozen is my right hand. Strong as a man, braver than most, and cunning in strategy, Lozen is a shield to her people." She chose, however, to help the woman and child staying behind. All she had was a rifle, cartridge belt, knife, and 3-day supply of food. In a real-life version of the birth from the Quiet Place, the woman giving birth had to be silent as she possibly could so as not to alert U.S. troops in the area. After the birth, Lozen then had to figure out how to get the mother and child to safety. And she did. She stole horses from the Mexican troops for the mother and the child. They fired at her as she rode away, but they missed. Then later, she stole a second horse from a cowboy.
She really does have a divine shield at this point.
Uh-huh. Then she stole more supplies from soldiers, including a saddle, rifle, ammunition, a soldier shirt, and a canteen.
Yeah, yeah.
She got both mother and child to the safety of a reservation, and after that, she went on to fight with the rest of the Apache. She's a badass.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Real life... The survival game, stuff like that, 7 days to die or whatever, and just put her out there. She will steal and take whatever she got to get through.
She knows what to do. Yep. There's another story that I don't have in here, but it's really cool that at one point in time, well, not cool, but sad that it was happening, but her response to it was cool, I should say. The women and children were trapped on one side of a river, and the army was closing in on them.
Yeah.
And they really didn't have any other option at that point. They had to cross the river. But people were scared. It was a strong, rushing river. And
right, that's how it goes, yeah.
Yeah, she basically stood up in front of them and, you know, rallied them together and plunged into the water herself first and everybody else followed. And she got everyone to safety on the other side.
There you go.
And then... after she made sure everybody was safe, they actually got to interview a boy he was a boy at the time. He was a grown man when they interviewed him. Mm-hmm. But they actually interviewed him, and he was there at that time.
Oh, wow.
And he said after he got them across the river, she had turned to his grandmother and said, "Okay, you need to take over now. Get everybody farther away.
Mm-hmm.
Me and the rest of the warriors will join you, but I need to go back to battle."
Yep.
So...
Yep.
Yeah.
I did my one job, now my other one starts.
Yep. But, you know, it was a hard choice for Lozen to choose between her people and her brother, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, that's what she felt. She had to be there for him. And they were the most effective, the most efficient, and the most deadly when they were together.
Right.
And, unfortunately, the worst happened. Mexican troops had laid a trap at Tres Castillos under the command of a man named Joaquin Torres. They ambushed the Apache, taking them by surprise October 14th of 1880. Victorio died that day, and only 17 of the nearly 400 Apache survived.
Man.
Many believe to this day that if Lozen had been with her brother, they would not have walked into the ambush.
Yeah, there's always that.
Yeah. But there's no real way to tell, you know, what would have been. But that's how a lot of people feel.
Ah, it's beautiful
feel.
To think, though. Yeah. You know, you're missing your right hand there, you know, you just kind of. But, I mean, hell, it's happened to the greatest generals throughout history.
They did continue. She continued leading the raids for about 5 years after Victorio's death.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just her and a very small group, but
effective.
Yeah. I mean, they made it 5 years until eventually they were captured.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Geronimo, she was fighting alongside Geronimo, and Geronimo wanted to continue to fight.
Yeah.
He didn't want to give up. Yeah. And she counseled him and said, "We will not have a people if we keep doing this."
Right.
You know, there's almost none of us left. We can't keep doing this. You know, what are we fighting for? You know, if we lose it all, kind of thing. So they convinced him to surrender. Eventually, Geronimo did surrender. And the rest of the Apaches were gathered. Instead of being put to death, they were told, "Okay, we're going to make you serve 2 years in a prison and then you're free to go." And it ended up being 28 years of imprisonment.
Man.
They sent them originally to St. Augustine, Florida, where they were there for a while. And then they eventually sent them to Alabama.
Jeez, way to ship them way the fuck away.
Mm-hmm. It was Mount Vernon Barracks in Alabama.
I always, the lover of the strategy that goes into battle and things like that. I always love the underdog, the hit and run, the guerrilla tactics. It always feels so much more personal than just, you know, endless rows of you know, soldiers lined up marching in.
Yeah, well. Weirdly, that was the funny thing, is one of the black soldiers at one point in time, like in the documentary, they said he had said that he was getting tired of following the white commanders around because they were still trying to do things the typical military way.
Yeah.
And it was causing them huge casualties.
Yeah.
And he said, "We need to fight like the Apache do or we're going to keep dying."
Yeah. I mean, our special forces have adopted Apache, you know, fighting techniques for long periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they have contributed a whole lot to our military history in many different ways.
Yep. And sadly, Lozen died of tuberculosis June 17th of 1889 and was buried in an unmarked grave. So,
oh, that's fucked. Where's her pile of stones like Leonidas had, you know? Where's that at?
I know.
Even, what's his name? Benedict Arnold, the fucking traitor. He even got a little monument with his fucking leg he lost for America. And come on, you shouldn't get a pile of rocks? Come on. That's bullshit.
Nope. Eh. Yeah. But that's the story of the warrior siblings.
Nice. Man. Yeah. I bet you they fought between each other like motherfuckers, too. I bet you there were some very intense conversations between those two.
I'm sure.
You can't be that close without having it all hammered out. You know what I mean? And then when you come up on a hitch, because everything runs so smoothly, when you hit that hitch, it's real.
Yeah. But I think the age difference might have helped.
Oh, fair enough.
And then growing up without a father, you know, because they both lost him so young, you know, Victorio became like Lozen's father.
Yeah.
So I'm sure, like, yes, they had their conflict most definitely, but
I bet you it was fun. I bet you they had the best fights. I don't know. I don't know how you say "go fuck your face" in Apache, but I guarantee it got muttered in a TV somewhere.
Oh, I'm sure.
I can't imagine. Like, I don't know. We get along pretty good. We fight. We fought pretty intensely before. I can't imagine what it would be like in this.
In life and death circumstances.
Life and death. You got like, but your life and death, you're on the run or you're moving around, however it is. But either way, every day is survival. But there's still petty shit to argue about.
Well, what matters is that they came together when it counted.
Yeah, but that's the thing. You don't get that kind of cement without working through that the bullshit.
That's true.
You don't get that kind of bond without working through bullshit. You don't. I'm telling you.
I tried to go into more depth, but unfortunately there just wasn't much to go off on. Apparently a lot of the stories the Apache keep close. You know, they don't like sharing them. They'll share a little bit here and there, you know, keep their memory alive. But it's largely a, these are ours kind of thing. You know, and I get that. Mm-hmm. I respect that.
Oh, join all the great warriors in the annals of history.
Yep. But I liked the story. I thought it was really interesting. You don't really hear about warrior siblings that often. Mm-mm. And especially you wouldn't think of like a male and female, and sister.
Fair. That's fair. Yeah. I mean, it brought up some, And you know, just trying to think through it, like mythologically, there's a few there, but like real life examples of, I guess there's some Roman ones, but like just siblings sharing the battlefield in one way or the other.
Yeah. You know?
Didn't the Prussian general, didn't he have another brother that was a general? He had a few siblings. I thought he had another one that was also in command of troops. We had talked about.
I mean,
that throwback to the Prussian episode.
You do see
episode.
That a lot. Yeah,
but not when it's like guerrilla
Frederick the Great.
Stuff. Yeah, yeah.
His brother, yes. But not this closely.
Yeah. It wasn't them with a group of 25 dudes, or not 25, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It wasn't them and 400 Apaches.
It wasn't literally working side by side
all
the time. Yeah.
But yeah, so to like and then to be that small of a unit and you know.
But to do all of this with civilians.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not just a group of warriors. They were doing this with women, children, elderly. Yeah, the whole shebang.
Yeah, it's crazy. And they have the success rate that they had.
Yeah. For as long as they had it.
Yeah.
It's damn impressive. They knew that land inside and out, backwards and forwards.
Mm-hmm.
Every nook, cranny, and crevice, they knew.
Craziness.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh, man.
And landed, like, looking at the in the documentary, the docuseries, like, they went through the areas, and holy crap. I'm a pussy. I wouldn't make it. Like, there's no damn way.
Honey, we're ginger. If they put us in the desert, we'd burn to a crisp before we made it to the next thing of shade.
They would find a human-sized piece of bacon just laying in out on a rock somewhere.
I'd say we were built for overcast and cloudy.
Exactly. Oh, God.
See, and I actually don't mind desert temperatures and stuff with low humidity, and, you know, the high heat doesn't bother me that much. Mm-hmm. But, man, yeah, it just, unless I'm out with SPF 85 all the fucking time, I just burn to a crisp everywhere.
Yeah. Sometimes I don't mind it. Sometimes it's really nice to stand there in the warmth and just, you know, stand. But I have to do it under a parasol or something because there's just no way.
Yeah, fair. Direct sunlight, yo.
Yeah. I remember at one point in time, I was working outside and a coworker like grabbed my arm, pulled me back into the shade and said, "I can hear your skin sizzling." He goes, "I just know you're getting sunburnt right now and I'm in pain."
Yeah.
Vicariously.
I say I've turned lights on too bright and got burned.
Right.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
Yeah.
But man, I don't know. I couldn't imagine roving through the places they were roving through and fighting the way that they fought. And like the one soldier said, you didn't see nothing but smoke and bullets. So,
yeah, it's a sad story, but their actions were really admirable. And the way that they
That's
handled
every
it,
story
man.
Of every warrior and commander is like, in full context, you're telling the story of people killing and dying.
Yes.
But inside of that, there are beautiful stories of the human condition.
Yeah.
And this is one of them. This is a brother and a sister fighting for their very existence and the existence of their people who tried compassion toward their, what they didn't even consider as their enemy necessarily until they finally had to. And yeah. Even then, they still maintain all of the compassion that they could while still being brutal and effective warriors.
Yeah. I know I would not have been as cool if my wife and children had died.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, yeah, no, I'm putting the war paint on and sneaking in.
Exactly.
Camp.
I would have been instantly blood. It's all blood. Yeah. All I want is blood.
Yeah.
I know the very human response I would have was I want to hurt them as bad as they hurt me. So to rise above that is really admirable to me. I wish I had that.
Right. Yeah, I'm not sure I do either.
Yeah. I'm just going to flat out say I don't.
I don't either. I've always said the quickest way for me to go to prison is for somebody to touch my wife or my kid, and then that's mm-hmm. it. I care very little after that point. I will smile in the fucking mugshot. I don't care. I will do life with a smile on my face.
I remember years and years and years ago.
But I'm gonna earn the life sentence.
Sorsha and Liam were gonna be in school together, and you told me that story of Liam walking up to you and telling you that he was sorry, but if somebody picked on Sorsha, he'd have to fight him.
Yeah. Yep. And he has. He's done that before. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, though, our Brody, mm-hmm. also autistic, he's been picked on a few times at school. Mm-hmm. And he did not react in a passive way.
Yeah.
Brody will punch you. Mm-hmm. Brody will punch you in the teeth.
Yeah. Sorsha will too.
At one point we didn't know, you know, how passive he would be in such a situation, and now we're trying to like, okay, you gotta calm down just a little bit.
Look, we want you to defend yourself, but
you can't not like what the kid said. Just haul off.
Exactly. That ain't self defense at that point.
Jeepers, you got man. But yeah, at one point, you know, you thought now you gotta just, buddy's gotta be there to pull him off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Gotta be the one to hold him back now. Mm-hmm. He's a good kid. He's great until you push him.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's got a mean right hook.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, we were actually talking about that earlier today, is that my daughter Sorsha is not aggressive toward smaller children at all, and would go out of her way, even if she's being extremely annoyed by them.
Yeah, yep.
In fact, she will throw up her hands and go, get them away from me. Get them away from me right now. Her hands are in the air because she's not going to touch them, but she's letting you know you need to do something.
Which usually when she's frustrated or annoyed, she just removes herself.
Yeah.
Like, she'll be the first person to just leave.
Yeah.
Like, everybody's hanging out and she's had enough of the stimuli and she's just out. Like, yeah.
And she doesn't announce it. No. Nope. She doesn't make any production.
No, it's a very Irish
it.
Goodbye. It's just leave. Just fucking leave.
She's a master. Aiden is too.
So today at mom's house, we walk back in and we're like, she's in your room. Like, okay, mm-hmm. didn't see her out here with everybody. She doesn't say, she just grabs what she's doing and goes.
Yep, exactly. And Aiden just fell asleep in the chair.
So she's throwing her hands up to go, mm-hmm. okay, somebody help me out here. That's actually miles more of communication than she usually will do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's I'm at my point, help now, please.
Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah, I admire it. Like, I respect it. It's a, you know.
Oh, yeah. No, I haven't, now that she's back in schools,
mm-hmm.
that'll be a fun experiment. I hope it goes well.
Me too. We'll see, though. Right. But I'm very proud of all the progress she's made.
Oh, yeah. Oh, seeing all them kids, like I said, standing there with Dad and everybody, it's just like, God, do you feel old yet?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah. But it's nice, too.
Is it, though?
Yeah. Getting old is an honor.
I mean, look, you survived. That's kind of the genetic honor, is you made it. Lots of people haven't made it to my age, which is crazy to think about, but...
It is.
Man, it is... It's not the getting older part. Getting older is great. As long as you're doing it right, like, you have more money and you have, you know, you have more comfortable settings, you know, you have, you know yourself better. You can make it, you know, your life is as comfortable as you make it. And,
yeah.
But, like, you know, the standard gripe of, get out of bed, shit's sore, like...
Yeah.
Look at the refrigerator wrong, gain 5 pounds, like...
Mm-hmm.
Stress will kill you. Your doctor says so because you actually have, you know, you go see that person. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. And then, like, looking over and it's like, you know, talking to Dad about what I'm doing with my son is the same thing that him and I were doing when I was my son's age.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the one that really made me feel old? It was when Liam was born, Emma was the same age that Liam is now when her son was born.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's that, you know what I mean? That gap between it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very funny.
It's funny how that works out, because I was the same age when I had Sorsa that Mom was when she had me.
Oh, yeah? There you go.
Yeah. So.
Man. Yeah. Yeah, I just looked around the room and felt old today. It was great. Man.
I don't know.
The new year has me reminiscing on all the time.
Yeah.
Like, me and Amanda were talking about it. Like, we have spent the last 15 new years together, you know, 16 new years together.
Mm-hmm.
And every year got better. It was nice. No resolution necessary. Just making it better and living our life. Yeah. I was sappy about it. Nobody else was fucking awake, man. I had to wake her up like with 5 minutes to go. She's passed out in the chair. Buddy is a teenager, so he doesn't care about much if his friends aren't doing it. And so it's just kind of me waiting on the countdown, just had a little drink in my hand, and I don't know. I was all sappy about it and thinking.
Yeah. We had gotten the sparkling cider for the kids, the non-alcoholic stuff,
mm-hmm.
and then we got a bottle of champagne for us, and the four of us sat and did the countdown together and toasted afterwards, and it was nice.
I'm ruined. I can't just drink champagne. It has to be a mimosa.
Yeah, that's Mom's fault.
It really is. It really, really, really is.
Yep. She's the one that introduced us to that, and it's like, okay. Now we have to, like, once in a while, you know, just indulge. It's
I have, like, it's been a while because Amanda doesn't drink anything. She has a sip of whiskey every now and again, but, like, she doesn't. She's as square as it gets. God bless her.
Yeah.
She takes me and all of reality sober. God bless you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She is a saint. We've established.
I don't know how you do it. But she used to get champagne on, and that's how I would have to drink it, because like a mm-hmm. glass of it just wasn't right. It felt like I was always missing something. So
I
pour orange juice in there.
I have to say, I've kind of noticed something, and I don't know if it's universal, but I've noticed it just within my circles anyway,
mm-hmm.
that. Me, you, and most of the neurodivergent people that I know that have partners that are extremely organized.
Yeah. Well, they have the type of organization that can compensate for our lack of.
Yes.
Yeah. And so it's not uncomfortable to slot us in that position because, like, you are. It's like a.
Like, they almost enjoy it.
Well, I have friends who are amazed that, like, I don't know what I make.
Yeah.
Like, I've never seen one of my paychecks, because mm-hmm. I don't have to.
She takes care of it.
I know generally what's in what account and what we've got and what we owe. And it's a general sense. I can nail a good rounded number, but I can't ever get it right. But I don't have to.
Yeah.
All the bills are always paid. Mm-hmm. The card always works when I scan it. Like, my credit goes up. I don't have to pay attention to it because she's so goddamn good at it. And she even said, she's like, I kind of have it on autopilot. She goes, if you were to mess with it, you just fuck with my system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how Scotty is too, but he's got a head for numbers. He's really good with all
that. Well, I've asked her before. It's like, should I take a more active role in this? And she's like, look, I appreciate the fact that you pondered it.
Yeah.
No.
That's exactly how Scott was. He was like, don't touch my system. Yeah, don't look at my system.
Does it work? Yeah, does it work? Then don't fuck with it.
Exactly.
That's very, very much how it is. And you know what? I respect it. And I honestly, it's a burden I'm happy not to, to have. I don't like the numbers. I was so bad at balancing my own checkbook, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can. I do okay on my own, but he does better, so.
I was just, I swear, this is the truth. If it wasn't for Amanda, I'd probably have a lot of nice things. I just fucking live in the box that they came in, because.
That is my favorite thing to tell people.
It is, it is so humbly true.
Yeah.
I can budget in to buy a lot of shit, but man, when it comes down to some of the things, I'm just real bad at paying some bills sometimes. I can make the money to pay the bills, but then organizing it all to do that is a different story.
I got really fortunate. Well, we got really fortunate, too, with our mom, our stepmom, Dawn.
She's, oh, yeah, yeah.
She sat me down and taught me how to budget, how to plan for bills, how to find out approximately what they would be, and, like,
I'm glad you learned something, because I remember it all, and it went one ear right out the other, because what I applied versus what I was taught was just a fucking mess.
No, a lot of the advice she gave me saved my ass, like, multiple times.
Fair.
And we've sat Aiden down and I've given all him the same advice. Mm-hmm. I did it with Emma too. I sat her down. I even got her like a book to keep track of everything in. See, like, and taught her how to budget.
I would have to say that the one piece of financial advice that I got growing up that was like incorrect was like that you shouldn't have a credit card. You shouldn't have credit cards. You shouldn't have credit cards.
Mm.
And that's not the case. You should. And you should keep it active. So your credit's always active. You just shouldn't pay interest on that credit card or spend too much on it.
Yeah.
But
yes, that was the thing we went over with Aiden, too, is like we took one of the ones you get in the mail.
We're a financial advice podcast now. Fuck yeah.
Yeah, no, we're not. Because we're still both poor as shit. We are still both broke, bitch. I was
gonna say, you guys don't take financial advice from two poor people.
Right? But we got one of those, you know, those cards in the mail.
Yeah, yeah.
And we told him, never do this shit. Like, it's a scam, and here's why. And we showed him the percentage rates, the yearly fees, all of that that's in the fine print. And he was like, shit, I would have never looked at that. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, that's why we're telling you.
Yeah, at his age, you're better off going and taking a couple $100 to your local bank and getting yourself like a prepaid or a secured credit card where you put the money down on it and they set the limit for it. And then when your credit gets good enough, eventually they'll just mature it into a regular credit card.
Yeah.
But it gives you the training wheels on how to spend a credit card.
Yeah.
And to be completely fair,
Aiden is really good at saving.
I have great credit now, by the way.
Yeah.
After 2 to 3, because I had no credit before. I was 32 years old with zero credit.
Yeah.
I just had nothing. I had no credit history, which was good for me because it's better to rehab than a bad history.
Yeah.
So I was able to just in like 2 to 3 years go from zero credit to actually having good credit.
Yeah.
And yeah, but that's all I do is I maintain small credit cards, actual credit cards. I keep something paying on them. I try to pay as little interest as possible. But yeah, man, turning that all around has been that was the cycle of 2022 for me, was like finalizing a lot of the shit that I've been trying to turn around for the last 5 years. Stopping smoking. I lost 30 fucking pounds.
Yeah.
Getting my credit straight, getting my insurance right, where I can go and see a dentist and a doctor and all of that, and getting retirement set up. Like, I really stepped into what I need to do for the next half of my fucking life. in this last year, and I'm really I'm really hoping to progress further down that road of maturity this year.
Fingers crossed.
Fucking A.
I hope it happens for you.
Man, looking back on it, what a wild year it was.
Yeah.
I'd say it's the first year I started doing the podcast with you. So that'll go down in the annals of history there as the brother and sister team who fought valiantly on the microphones every week to bring entertainment to the masses.
I can think of worse callings.
If it wasn't for your strategic planning and cunning cunning oversight and my spur of the moment reactions, and I can't think of anything glorious to say about myself, but we wouldn't have the podcast, you know?
You have very insightful reactions. I enjoy it. I enjoy conversing with you.
Aww.
So just in general.
Aww.
So.
Are we going to go to war against a white man together?
We kind of are.
Everybody's in war against the man, honey.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But we're doing it in a platform with microphones.
So. Hey.
Telling history. Man. Because I do firmly believe that if we don't know our history, yeah, we're doomed to repeat it. And we see that. You study history even a little bit, and you see the patterns rolling again and again and again. And
yeah.
You realize how nothing is new. So
Well, there are significant new things, and they lead to significant advances in civilization. And while none of them are perfect, we keep getting better examples of what tomorrow could be should we keep moving in those directions. So, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, like, in the, a lot of the basic conflicts are still there and probably always will be as part of the human condition, you know? So, hopefully as time marches on, we continue to evolve.
Oh, we have. So. I mean, if the data trending, you know, keeps trending in the direction it has, like all violent crime has gone down, wars have gone down, deaths during wars have gone down, like yes, while we do get to see it more up close and personal nowadays because
which makes cameras are everywhere, feel bigger than it is,
but like in all instances that stuff is slowing down,
yeah,
which is a hopeful thing,
which I love seeing, like especially young people in social media doing amazing things.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
Well, I really think that there's a generation after the moon landing that kind of there, you know, while the prevalence of the space race and everything was gone, we didn't have much to reach for, and I think other people have made this case, maybe Neil deGrasse Tyson, maybe, but we had not a whole lot to look forward to or up to or strive toward. And I think that, like, God, if I say like one more time, I'm gonna kill myself. I think that with the transparency of the world around us and the problems that are being highlighted, there are so many things for people to focus on and strive toward, you know. Just and not even so much as a group. You can be one person and strive towards just one goal, and you know what I mean. You can do these things. I don't know. I like I said, it's all good and bad, but I mean, we're trending in a direction. We're just some of it's good, some of it's not. But hopefully, 2023 turns out to be less crazy than all the years before.
You know what? I have a good feeling. Not to jinx it, you know, knock on wood kind of thing, but I don't know, I got a good feeling.
Well, I know personally none of these years have been too terrible for me, and thank God for that, but
I've had some rough ones.
Yeah, I'm hoping it goes well for everybody else, too, because I know everybody else wasn't as lucky. So.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. But, you know, at the end of the day, I have the people I love still.
Yeah.
You know?
We've seen they're not times, bad.
But yeah, no. They're okay.
Actually, we just went through all that with when we were trying to come back to the podcast when Amanda had COVID and everything like that. And the boy was sick. I was so fucking lonely because both of them were sick, and I was just trapped in this room.
Mm-hmm.
and I couldn't hug and kiss her when I come home, which we are very affectionate, you know, very PDA when we're in home. Well, I shouldn't say PDA, but we're very, you know, physical displays of affection and stuff like that when we're at home with lots of hugs, lots of kissing, and I'll slap her on the butt every time I go by, vice versa. I couldn't do any of that. And it was so fucking lonely to not be able to just get my hugs from her, not be able to, you know, nothing.
It's almost strange, isn't it? Like, you don't really notice it in your day-to-day, but when it's gone, you feel its absence. Yeah.
And it was like a week and a half of just lonely.
Yeah. Every time Scotty's had a long stint in the hospital, where it's been weeks on end, I can't sleep the first couple days because it's like I don't feel him in the house.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
His presence isn't there.
Yeah.
And it's a hole.
Yeah.
You know?
And it was so much worse knowing that she was within arm's reach, but like,
I couldn't
afford to get sick at that point. We had inventory, end of the year inventory coming up at work. I'm a big piece of that. Like, I literally was told that, like, my boss told me to camp out at work so I could avoid getting sick from my family.
Yeah.
And, but you know, I knew I couldn't afford to cross the line, and you don't know how bad. I want my hugs.
I was really, really grateful to you guys last time Scotty was in the hospital for any length of time.
Yeah.
Because you guys took Sorsha for me so that I could go sleep in the hospital.
You already
room
know that.
With
let her stay.
I know.
Give a shit.
But I'm still grateful. I'm grateful that I have you there.
I'm
you know?
Grateful
that there
you
are people
thought
that
of me
don't
and
have that.
Trusted me with that. Because, like, I get it. And you're already wondering what's going on with your old man and how that's going
to
go down. And there's so many questions.
Didn't
and you
have
don't
to
wanna
worry about her at all. And I knew that.
Yeah.
And it was so
that's
comforting.
The main thing, yeah. It's like, yeah, you know, if she comes here, she just does whatever the fuck she wants to do.
I got to be there for him.
She's the one, I say, she's the one being on the planet I don't have to say no to, and it's great.
Yeah.
I just don't. Like, what do you want? You
she
want
knows,
that?
Too.
I know. Yep. She knows. Do whatever the fuck you want here. I don't give a shit. Oh, you want that? You can have that. Sure. Yep. Oh, you want to survive on candy till your mom picks you up?
But what's hilarious is Amanda can tell her no, and yet she will walk past you to go hug Amanda.
She'll listen to Amanda say no even and be okay with it.
Yeah.
Well, she doesn't really throw a fit about it, nothing like that. I just don't tell her no. I'm just a toy. I'm just the toy she passes by.
She can smell the blood in the water.
I know. Sorry,
she knows you're the weak link.
But with my son and my two nephews, I can't be like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So with her, she's the only one I'm just like, I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit. You can do whatever you want to, kid. Gummy snacks before dinner? Fuck yeah. Two handfuls. Let's go.
Yeah.
I'm more famous for giving her pop. But...
Oh, God. I'm so mad at you.
I do it all the time. I don't give a shit. Be mad.
Well, now she's old enough.
Yep.
But the first time.
Oh, I kept doing
it.
Yep. Oh, I kept doing it, and she loved it.
She did.
She'd show up. You'd show up, and she'd just be polishing off the end of the, like, the second or third one I gave her. It's such a good uncle to her, such a bad uncle for you.
You know, truthfully, though, I didn't really mind it because it was only once in a while.
Oh, yeah. And that's the thing. You give them enough sugar, and, like, when that spin out's done.
Yeah, they're crashed.
They're crashed, yeah. It's great. You just take them up real high, and they fall down real low.
Yeah, anyway, I knew it was a fun little bonding thing for you guys, so.
Yeah, yeah. Just sat around here and ate junk food and drank pop.
Yeah.
Watched the phones, watched whatever. It didn't really.
And anybody who has a child with autism knows that, like, getting them to eat healthy is hard.
Yeah.
So, like, if she has a couple days where she doesn't
getting them,
like,
to do anything they don't particularly want to do.
Is hard.
That's just general.
Yes.
So I didn't care. She could come over here and die. She could eat whatever she wants. I'd go into the back and just be like, look at the snack cap. She'd drag me back there and I'd be like, whatever you want. Like, yeah. She'd ask me for things and be all nice about it. It's like, honey, dude, whatever. Just all of it. Both of them. Two of those, three of them. I don't care. I don't care if you don't finish them, which is, like, I don't get to be like that with my kid. And I don't get to be like that. My kid hates it, by the way, but... Why do they get away with everything? Yeah, you don't. Sorry. Because one I'm responsible for if they commit crimes, and the other I'm not.
Yeah. Which, by the way, like, when we were on our way here, like, I really enjoyed talking to my nephew.
Yeah. He's pretty cool, isn't he?
Yeah.
And the older he gets, now that he's a teenager, and the older he gets and everything, he's developing, and he's quite a character.
Yeah. It was one of those, like, conversations where you feel like, okay, I'm getting to know this person.
Yeah.
Not just the child, but the person.
Yeah. And it was really cool. He wears everything on his sleeve. He's quick to bear it all. He's like me. He just kind of lives it raw and out in the open. Just,
yeah.
You know, he's emotionally deeper than anybody gives him credit for.
Hmm.
But he's my reflection.
Yeah.
I love that kid. Yeah, I spent the whole week with him. had this nice week off work, and me and him spent the whole time together. Amanda went; she had to work this week, and so it was just me and him, and all day long. And we played video games, and we hung out, and we watched movies, and we talked, and just it was a good bonding experience. Just a good long period of hanging out.
You gotta
get to know him at different stages of their life.
Yeah.
And I feel like he's just rolled over into this teen stage, and he did it. He was ready. Like, he had the preloaded software ready to go,
because
he just stepped into this teen life, and it's there's so much more to know about
this
him.
This is gonna sound a little like judgy, but maybe I'm being judgy. It's fun, but I always get really frustrated with the people who are like, oh, I just don't feel like I'm in the Christmas spirit this year. And I'm like, well, no, because you're not putting the effort into it.
Well,
like, I get going through shit and doing that, but it's perspective. To me, I'm looking at this as a chance to have time with my kids while I can still have it.
Yeah.
You know? And it's not about the presents, it's about making the food together. You know, sitting and watching the movies together, having the hot chocolate together, decorating together.
Yeah.
You know, it's playing the games together.
Yep. Which is that was the big part of this week. You know, him and his mom made Christmas cookies, and, you know, we didn't, to be fair, we don't really do holiday spirit a whole lot in here. It's a very vague sense of spirit. We're always about family as it is, but, like, you know, I have that tiny little tree right there. We have the other small one in Buddy's room, but that was, like, all we did. But we decorated the cookies, and we played in the snow, and we enjoyed each other immensely.
Yeah.
And, you know,
there's something to be said for developing traditions with your family.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh yeah. Well, that's why, you know, the holidays are the way the holidays are. Like,
yeah,
while they've been corporatized to no fucking end, like, before they were corporatized, they, you know, they were passed on because year to year, because people believed in, you know, whatever aspects of that tradition, you know, held it together, whether that be the family gathering part, it could be the religious component, it could be all of the above. But, you know, these traditions mean so many things in so many different families, but they all have that common component of together.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I understand that need. I do. I get it.
Yeah. And to be clear, I'm not, when I talk about those people, I don't feel like Christmassy this year. I'm not talking about people that have lost somebody, because I understand that. That it literally is disrupting that togetherness.
Yeah.
So I understand it in those cases. But if it's like, you know, just people are upset about...
Oh, I don't know. It could be
outside bullshit.
It could
it's
be
like,
depression. It could be all kinds of stuff. I've had years before where I didn't give a shit.
I get that too.
Yeah. And it just depends on your state of mind, and it depends on where you're at. And everybody's always in some different place and is dealing with something different.
But I do feel like there's that aspect too of, like, it's about your attitude. And what you choose to make it.
Oh, that's so many things in life.
Yeah.
That's making lemons out of lemonade and all that fun stuff. That's a lot of
But I don't think people apply it to Christmas. You know? That's what I'm saying. It seems to be that they just expect, like, it to just magically feel that way. And it's like, no, sometimes you got to make the magic.
I think that's true of anything. Like, it is what you make it, right?
Yeah.
Everything is what you make it. You can...
Well, I'm going to make it really loud and obnoxious with bright lights and chocolate. Like, you bitches don't want that. That's on you, but I'm having that shit.
The best ones I've seen are the people who have, like, the animated light things in their front yard where they do memes and shit like that.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Some of those are the best.
Oh, I love Christmas decorations.
I love dads who do that kind of shit. Like, you are heroes. Yes. And I'm beneath you.
Oh, the dads that really get into Halloween, too. The ones that, like, build the huge displays. I love that. I love that so much.
I'm glad somebody out there does it, too.
Like, I am, too.
It's kind of like in religion, there's always your centrists and your believers, but they're not. Mm-hmm. And then you have your fanatics.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Christmas and Halloween fanatics are
the people who will knock
best.
On your door and tell you about the wonderfulness that is Halloween and how you can better worship
the great pumpkin. Yeah, how about you can better worship Charlie
our
Brown
great pumpkin. For real. I love that shit.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like when somebody takes something that is cheerful and wonderful and becomes fanatical about it, you know. Like, it's something that hooked onto them, and you can see the real emotion pouring from them, and the happiness not that they get not just from making it but sharing it,
and that spreads.
I love it. Yeah, I love that shit.
I do too. Well, we'll end on that happy note. Oh. We don't often end on a happy one, but let's do it this time.
Fair enough. Here's to our warrior siblings. Yo.
Yep. And a family togetherness.
Mm.
So.
And a family togetherness. 2023.
Yes, yes.
All right.
Awesome. Well, happy new year, everybody. And thank you so much for joining us on today's episode. We really appreciate you being here. If you're a new listener, welcome. If you're an older listener, or a repeat listener, I should say, thank you for coming back. We really are grateful to you. We really are happy and to keep doing this, and that people are listening at all is always something we appreciate. So thanks again to the Paranormal Podcasting community. We appreciate you guys and your support as always. And yeah, thank you guys so much. We'll see you on the other side.
See ya.